Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Let's make a deal.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. We haven't heard much deal-making lately with the economy where it is, but this morning there's lots of buyout speculation. There's word that the bank Washington Mutual might get a $5 billion investment from some private equity firms. WAMU has been hit hard by the subprime mess. Plus, the Swiss drug maker Novartis said it's buying a stake in an American eye care company called Alcon. Nestle is the seller. And Microsoft and Yahoo are emailing each other about a buyout. Microsoft says Yahoo has 3 weeks to take its offer. Yahoo says Microsoft can do better. Wall Street is abuzz with all this talk. The Dow is up 47 points to 12,657. The NASDAQ has gained 9 so far, and the S&P 500 has started the week up 6. The Asian markets finished a percent higher, and European shares have added a percent so far. It was a bad weekend for Hillary Clinton's chief campaign strategist, Mark Penn. First, he was fired by the Colombian government. Penn's PR firm was helping Colombia lobby for a free trade agreement with the U.S. And for doing that, Penn was fired by the Clinton campaign. Meanwhile, the Bush administration might still offer up that trade agreement this week. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports from our America's desk at WLRN.
The U.S. has sent Colombia billions in aid and offers sweetheart trade terms on exports such as flowers and coffee. But when it comes to approving a free trade deal, the Democrats in Congress stand in the way. Adam Isaacson is with the Center for International Policy, a think tank in Washington, D.C. He says many Democrats are lukewarm on free trade, especially with Colombia's spotty human rights record.
Most Democratic leaders that I've talked to, they're just shaking their head and saying no to the free trade agreement and covering their ears when it comes to time to talk about what to do instead.
But President Bush might provoke a schoolyard rumble. He's expected to introduce the trade deal in Congress as early as this week.
They're calling this the nuclear option, in which they're actually introducing it, risking it actually being defeated. We've never really had a major trade agreement defeated in the last generation or so.
Once the Colombian trade deal is introduced, Congress has 90 days in session to vote it up or down. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Today there's a huge conference in San Francisco on cybersecurity. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
An IT professional's work is never done. Tim Mather is chief security strategist of the RSA conference.
Trying to stay up with what those evolving threats are, as well as new products that may not be as secure as they should be, as well as products becoming A, more complex, and B, more networked, it's quite a challenge.
Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff will attend the conference. He'll report on a recent government experiment to stage and thwart a simulated cyber terrorist attack. Turning to the private sector, the conference will also focus on the next generation of security software for interactive sites like Facebook and MySpace. Then there are events dedicated to more immediate concerns.
For example, we have one that is looking at information security in the Olympic Games.
Mather says many sports fans will be keeping up with the games via the web, and that means people working round the clock to make sure all that real-time information isn't compromised. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Another one down, another one gone. Airline, that is. Skybus, out of Columbus, Ohio, is expected to file for bankruptcy today. It began shutting down over the weekend. It's the third airline to stop flying in the last week. This is the Morning Report for Monday, April 7th on Marketplace.org. This week, the top military commander in Iraq is expected to tell Congress the buildup of U.S. troops has improved security. His testimony comes as Congress takes up another bill for war spending. John Dimsdale has more.
The Pentagon is expected to ask for just over $100 billion to fund war operations through September. These so-called supplemental bills have become the normal way to pay for the war, but Stephen Kosiak at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment says other spending is beginning to creep into the war budgets.
It's pretty clear it includes perhaps $10 billion for kind of long-term modernization requirements and stuff that really probably belongs in DOD's base budget.
That means money for military transport planes and domestic base construction. The Center for Defense Information's Winslow Wheeler says the Pentagon has come to rely on these emergency spending bills.
They try to delay the requests as long as possible to help avoid two things: sticker shock over the cost of the war, and more accurate, higher estimates of what the likely annual deficit is going to be.
Congress hopes to pass the bill by the end of May. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The price of rice hasn't been so nice lately, at least if you have to import it. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has more.
Nigeria is the world's third largest buyer of rice, but lately Nigerian rice traders have been on the sidelines, betting prices would fall. Just the opposite has happened. Colin Carter is a professor of agricultural and resource economics at the University of California, Davis.
Any importer that has put off buying rice is faced with significantly higher prices, 60 to 70% higher than what they were a few months ago.
International demand is greater than the supply of available rice. That's led several key rice-growing countries to impose export restrictions, resulting in even tighter supplies. Prices are also being driven by some of the same forces boosting all commodities, a weak dollar and high fuel prices. Ironically, oil profits could help petroleum-rich Nigeria offset the cost of its more expensive rice. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Imagine this. You read a story on the website of your local newspaper. You post a comment and browse photos of other people who share your opinion. Maybe you see who their friends are, and perhaps you meet up for a drink. You might call it Facebooking the news. And one newspaper you know very well is already doing it. Lenora Chu reports.
Before the internet brought news to your computer screen, people got it other ways. Reading the paper at breakfast, talking it over with colleagues, watching TV in the evening with family. USA Today executive editor Kinsey Wilson.
News, and at some level, has always been kind of a social activity.
So USAtoday.com invited visitors to create a personal profile, upload a photo, and post comments to any story they wished. Those who wanted could even write a blog.
The gratifying thing to us was that we, from day one, immediately saw a level of engagement that we frankly didn't know whether it would exist or not when we launched this.
Site visitors have posted more than 2 million comments on the story pages since the paper made that option available last year. In the process, little communities have flourished. Wilson says in one Midwestern town, site visitors helped a woman recover a lost stash of cash via a blog.
They were familiar enough to each other from their day-to-day interactions.
USA Today has also assigned a staffer to comb through user comments for story ideas, but only 10% of the roughly 2 million daily visitors are active on the site. And the paper's challenge is making sure what they call passive readers keep coming back. It's all part of the struggle to stay relevant in the congested media world.
It becomes harder and harder for a site like ours or the New York Times or the BBC or any others to create a pure destination that people will go to with regularity.
Newspapers from coast to coast are following suit. They all want to create the Yelp.com for the literary set, says Jupiter research analyst Barry Parr, and, of course, attract readers, web clicks, and more ad revenue.
The handwriting is on the wall. That software is available. Everybody's excited about it, and you're going to see them introduce it.
But with Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn, and countless other networking sites,
that raises a lot of interesting questions about how many social networks do you want to be a member of, and to what degree do you want to participate?
At a time when Facebook is encountering user fatigue, we'll see. In Los Angeles, I'm Lenora Chu for Marketplace.
Over the weekend, a group of countries called for urgent changes to the world's financial system. They want the International Monetary Fund to develop an early warning system for bank meltdowns and other crises. Sounds kind of like what Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson proposed last week.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
All right, Alan, you've had a few days to digest Paulson's 200-page report. It would give the Fed more power and streamline the oversight of Wall Street. Tell us what you think.
Forgive me, but I don't take the Paulson proposal seriously. And I'm not sure how seriously Paulson at the Treasury takes it. There's no legislation for this. I don't think this is a prayer of happening.
Wow. So this is just a piece of paper with some goodwill written on it?
Yeah.
Do you think that the Fed should have more authority?
I don't know. I mean, the Fed ought to be able to find out what's going on at say, an enormous hedge fund. But, I mean, what are you going to do? Have the Fed have people sitting on a hedge fund trading desk? Mm-hmm. I just don't understand practically how this could work without the Fed taking on some sort of moral obligation to make sure that big institutions aren't allowed to fail. I mean, and they should be allowed to fail.
The public seems to be upset with this bailout of Bear Stearns. But at the same time, they want the Fed to intervene in things like mortgage rates. I mean, I'm trying to weigh this, the reality versus the perception about the Fed's authority.
If you'll stand for a little psychobabble, people want to believe there's some divine power looking after them. And in financial things, there isn't. Back when Alan Greenspan was around, many people were under the delusion that Uncle Alan, as I used to call him, cared about your 401k or cared about your stock portfolio, and he didn't care at all. It's not his business. He's concerned about the financial system. And Bernanke, whom I don't know at all, but seems to be, you know, a very decent, well-intentioned, honest and honorable guy, he doesn't really care about your stock portfolio either. That's not his job. The Bear Stearns thing, suddenly the contrast between Bear Stearns and you and me became obvious, and the word bailout was on everybody's lips. So now everybody wants a bailout. I wouldn't mind getting a bailout either.
Yeah, right.
Scott, I just don't know where it's supposed to come from.
All right, Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine, thank you.
You're welcome.
Feel free to throw your two cents in. Log on to our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.